Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Click of Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 sales through Diamond to retailers for August 2009. And we're a little bit late this month. Work's been kind of keeping me busy and, you know, scheduling type stuff. But because I think the September numbers are already starting to come out. Of course, they tend to do just the top 10 and without any index numbers and then the top 100. And they're phasing the stuff in, which drives me nuts. You know, why not just release it all at once?
But by the time we get to it, you know, it's we've looked over these numbers pretty well. We've seen everybody else's perspective, and we give the best perspective, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, I don't see the point in rushing for this. I mean, this is stuff
no,
for...
No, you don't have to.
For August, I mean, anyone who says we're impacting how things sell, it's like, we're a few months behind the curve.
Exactly. It's mid-October, you know.
Mid-October, I mean, and sales for stuff shipping in November has already been ordered.
Right.
So, but, you know, hey.
Hey, we already know what's coming out in June of next year. Blackest Night hardcover.
I think that's just crazy.
It is crazy.
I don't look that far ahead. For me, if it's not solicited, it doesn't exist.
It's on Amazon, though. Does that count?
Not for me. I mean, yes, it's solicited, but until I see it in previews. Because, again, I don't do that much with the hardcovers like you and Bob do. You know what I mean? So I'm looking more from the monthly comics perspective in terms of my interest in the what I buy.
Right. But, well, I've always wanted to ask DC that. Like, why is it on Amazon or even Marvel for that reason? You know, why are they on Amazon or other marketplaces and they're not in before they're in previews? I don't see what the rush is to get it on Amazon.
I don't think it's because of Amazon. I think it's because of the way the book channel works.
Yeah.
They need more lead time to reserve the shelf space or whatever the deal is. Because I know with Amazon, you could have a book that you just hit off the shelf today, and you could have it up on Amazon by tonight.
But then why is it such a big – like, for example, there's not a whole lot of people that know that Blackest Night is on Amazon right now, right?
Right.
But when it comes out in previews – that week it hits, oh, the Blackest Night hardcover is available to buy. You know, well, you can buy it right now, really. You just have to go through Amazon. You're not going through your LCS.
Well, again, I think most people aren't hitting the Amazon stuff. That's something you've got to go search for, whereas previews, it kind of slaps you in the face if you look through previews.
Right.
And I think it's more a matter of for the brick-and-mortar stores and that whole pipeline, I think that's just a longer lead time. And since they've got to get it out to those other stores, it gets through those same channels to Amazon. Amazon has no real delay to speak of. Bam, it goes up with a, you know, order, you know, pre-order out through, you know, again, 9 months from now?
Well, but my question is, why wouldn't DC's The Source blog announce that it's up for pre-order on Amazon?
Because I don't think they want to jump the gun. I don't think they want to give anyone a reason to stop getting the monthly stuff in favor of the hardcover.
Okay.
I know at times Dan Didio has very explicitly said that one of his goals has been to get people more towards the monthly comics, not towards the collected editions.
Right.
That was around the time we started seeing the collected editions not coming out right on the heels of the books, but being, you know, 6 months or whatever down the line.
Right.
And I think that's a very smart move for DC. I think it's one Marvel would be well suited to adopt because, I mean, we've talked about this a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real incentive to get the monthly comics if you know a week or two or a month or whatever after the final issue, it's going to be available in a collected edition. I think part of why comics used to sell a lot more, by a lot more, I mean print runs that were bigger than some publishers do per month now. You know, I mean, a print run that was below 250,000 you know, back in the 80s or wherever, you know, word was that was enough for them to think, gee, should we continue the title or not? Now, through Diamond, most publishers don't crack that other than obviously Marvel and DC, and it takes them about 100 items a month to, well, do about 10 times that, but still.
Right.
My point being, back then, you either got the comic or you did not. If you did not, you did not read the story, unless you borrowed a friend's copy, whatever. There weren't trade paperbacks, there certainly weren't the hardcovers. I mean, not in the sense there are now. There were things like the Judas Contract, Son of Origins, and, you know, all those things. Mm-hmm. But few and far between, compared to now, I'm willing to bet that everything in, like, the October previews I've got sitting on my desk here, because I've still got to do my order and stuff, I'm willing to bet everything in there by the end of next year has been collected. You know, from right. Marvel and DC at the very least, and probably through most independent publishers, assuming it got printed and published at all.
Right.
And that suddenly takes the incentive away for people to get the monthly stuff. That's why we're seeing lower and lower sales levels on titles there. And that's why, you know, whenever somebody says, oh, well, you know, they'll make up for it in the trade sales. This month, I think we had some really, really strong selling titles on the trade list. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of months, our top item's been, what, 6,000, 7,000, maybe?
Oh, it's been a lot less than it used to be in 2008, for sure. Yeah.
And then it quickly gets down to that, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 level. Now, granted, because they've extended the list to 300 items, which we're going on almost a year now. I think we've got another month or two before we get a full year's data like that. We're seeing items that are doing down at the 300-400 level.
Mm-hmm.
But why get the trade? It's quote-unquote always available. Or you can get the hardcover, which quote-unquote is always available. And there's that myth of ever-present, you know, availability, which, I mean, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that's totally, a fallacy.
Right, it is.
I'm willing to bet there are a lot of collected editions, trades for, be it Sandman, Starman, Ms. Marvel, you know, pick random B-list titles.
The Deadpool
title.
Trades, whatever, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, they do go out of print. They do.
Oh, of course they do. I mean, how could a publisher afford to keep them all in print?
Right.
They're coming out with, you know, it feels like sometimes a dozen or so between, you know, at Marvel and or DC each month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously less so for each individual smaller publisher, but it costs money to print those things. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's interesting to watch how the cycle's going. Now, normally when we look at the top 300 trades, we've got a rough three-way split, Marvel, DC, everybody else. We have that again this month, but it's kind of interesting because Marvel came out on top, but just barely. DC, almost a match. I mean, just a little bit below by units, a lot further below by dollars because of the difference in the max price at Marvel and DC and the minimum price. I mean, the average price for the Marvel items was $22.65, whereas DC it was $16.91. So the DC items are just cheaper. So when you look at the percentage of the total sales by dollars, you know, for the top 300, it skews a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so those two split, you know, their part pretty evenly at just below 32% each. It was 31.97% by units for Marvel, 31.76% by units for DC. And really, we're talking at that point a difference of less than a quarter of a percent, 0.21% to be exact. And that's really only 743 items difference between the total sales for the two. Now, I did a little digging going back to the beginning of the final order era, which started in February 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, Diamond reported stuff based on pre-orders, which was what stores wanted to get and was counted whether or not it ever shipped. And in February of 2003, they shifted to final orders, which is based on what actually was invoiced to retailers for the month. And this is the third closest Marvel and DC have come during that time.
Hmm.
Back in July of 2004, DC squeezed ahead of Marvel by only 0.23% of a lead out of that top 100% pie, which was only 569 units. But the closest those two came to being neck and neck was back in April of 2004, where there was a 0.02% difference between Marvel and DC, with DC coming out on top, and that was only by 47 units. Which, when you scatter that across the top 300 and stuff, at that point, a strong case could be made that, you know, just a rounding issue, potentially. Mm-hmm. Although, given the index values, probably not the case, really, but still. You know, so there have been a couple of times Marvel and DC have come neck and neck like this. Typically, though, DC wins on the trade side. Although there are times when Marvel does so, they do so by a huge percentage, like a 25% lead like they had back in May 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see, you know, when that happens, and particularly this month when Marvel didn't have anything in the top 8 items. So for them to squeak out in front of DC and do it with only 80 items compared to the 98 items that DC had, interesting, trend there. And there's a lot to be said for having a very healthy kind of mid-list, selection of titles. So, but it was also a very good month for Image, which came in at 10.5% by units and 9% by dollars. And of course, I think a lot of that came down to, you know, that top item, which was the 10th volume of The Walking Dead trade paperbacks, which had 15,626 units.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Walking Dead, still a juggernaut. This is one of those where the difference between how it's doing on the monthly side and how it's doing on the trade side is really anomalous, in so much as kind of sort of you can almost bank on a rough, 10-to-1 difference between how the comics sell and the trade sell. And that's again, just a big ballpark type thing. But with Walking Dead, again, you've got that, 15,626 units on the trade side, and compare that to the 24,367 units for issue 64 of the monthly. And really, you're only talking about less than a 10,000 unit difference. Or that trade selling, 60% or so, roughly, of the how the monthly's doing?
Right.
So very anomalous there. But hey, that's great for Kirkman.
Well, not only is Walking Dead a juggernaut, but Invincible, too. I mean, my God, coming in at number 4 there.
Yeah, we've got the 11th issue, 11th volume there with 5,365 units. And, I mean, having both of those come out in the same month had to be, nice for Kirkman.
Mm-hmm.
On a financial basis or what have you. So, and again, those are reliable titles for Image. It's unfortunate that we're well past a year after Kirkman's manifesto on how he was going to try to save the comic industry, get more people to do creator-owned stuff, presumably through Image, and not really seeing that.
Yeah, whatever happened with that?
I'm going to say nothing.
Nothing, right.
I'm going to say worse than nothing. I think they've lost ground on that. Because you look at Top Cow's pilot season stuff, and it's all Kirkman Silvestri properties.
Right.
And wasn't the whole point of the first two rounds of pilot season to give people a chance to go get their property out there, let people vote, see if they like it or not?
Right, exactly.
And, disappointing there. And, Kirkman is kind of the lead guy for the Image Central line right now. Would have been nice to see him really kind of bring in some other people up in the ranks. And I think it would have strengthened the Image lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Kirkman's doing well with these two titles, but I'm not quite seeing that with Astounding Wolfman. Obviously Brit got canceled or ended, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to think that with proper marketing and some guidance and stuff, some of the other guys they've got over there really stand a chance of building a bigger audience. But, if he wants to do Image United instead, you know, go with the founding fathers of Image and their properties. More power.
Yeah,
to
they're
them.
They're going back to that well again, aren't they? Which is fine. It's their prerogative. You know, they're good properties, really, and they shouldn't be go by the wayside. You know.
Well, and I'm curious about that property in so much as having each of the six artists on every page doing their own characters.
Yeah.
Artistically, that should be very interesting and unique. Makes me wonder if it'll come out on time. But
yeah.
You know, it just seems like. Well, I mean, even with these two properties with Kirkman, Walking Dead, again, well over 15,000, Invincible, fairly well over 5,000. But, I mean, that's almost a 3-to-1 difference between those titles.
Mm-hmm.
And it really worries me when I see this kind of a rapid drop-off, particularly at the top of the list. Obviously, you go further down, you got more things doing in that middle range or whatever, but we go from the 15,626 with Walking Dead to a fairly, very healthy 12,478 units for Fables Volume 12, and then suddenly we're below 6,000 units.
Right.
And if trades were this, you know, saving grace for the industry, shouldn't they be selling better?
Mm-hmm.
And some people are probably saying, oh yeah, but the mass market. You look at the numbers that Brian Hibbs has leaked every year for the last couple on the book scan stuff for the year end. There are some books that are doing much, much better in the mass market than the direct market. DMZ is a good example with potentially, you know, 2/3 of its sales, you know, known sales between book scan and Diamond happening on the book scan side versus the Diamond side. Who knows how it's doing elsewhere in the world and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But for the average book, the most common case is it's doing maybe on par in the direct market, if that, and in a lot of cases, not even close to that. So I think there's a lot of, I don't want to say misinformation, but supposition being treated as fact,
mm-hmm.
which I think is not good. But, you know, obviously, Walking Dead and Fables, nice to see some strong numbers, well over 10,000. We have not seen that a lot this year. Hopefully we'll see more of it. Now, at rank 3, I see this as a really good sign for Boom Studios. They've got the first volume of Irredeemable, which was a $9.99 trade paperback, and it sold 5,709 units. And
you read that?
Yeah, I think it's great.
It's good. I hear great things about it, and I've yet to pick it up. And for $10, why haven't I yet? I don't know. You know,
well, I think
especially when you can go get it at a discount for probably like $6 at DCBS or something.
Exactly. I mean, Boom Studios is doing a lot of really good stuff. This is by Mark Waid. You can't go wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. I'm looking forward to the companion title they're starting up of Incorruptible.
I was just going to ask you, what other titles is Boom putting out that is more adult and, you know, more irredeemable in nature? Kind of like, I'm not looking at their Muppets stuff or anything like that, you know, but what's more of like their stuff for like you and I kind of thing?
Well, I was going to say, if you wanted to look at the Muppet stuff, that's down at rank 41 at 1,976 units, which is still pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really Boom is impressing me with their diversity of their lineup, I think, and we've talked about this before, no doubt will again.
Right.
They've got a really wide selection. Safari's stuff for a more adult audience, certainly you've got the 28 Days Later stuff, I think, would go over well. You've got the Die Hard property based on the movies.
Oh, that's right. They're doing Die Hard. I forgot about that.
Incorruptible, which is kind of the villain-turned-hero flip side of Irredeemable.
Okay.
Shows a lot of promise. Do androids dream of electric sheep?
Oh, no. Are they doing that, or is
That's Boom Studios.
I thought Dynamite was doing that.
You would be incorrect.
I am incorrect.
Bob
okay.
and I even had Chip Mosher on to talk about that.
Oh, then you would know. I apologize.
No, it's okay. I get stuff backwards a couple of times myself. I've had a few where it's like, was that Virgin? Was that Boom? Was that Dynamite? Who was that? You know, because
when that comes out in an omnibus, like a trade paperback, that's going to be a nice book, I think. That is an interesting book because I think you guys talked about that, how they're literally they're writing in like every single piece of the novel into this comic book.
Well, and I understand.
It's a real interesting take on how they're doing it.
I understand their decision to not edit Philip K. Dick's work and then to have the art kind of complement it. I think there are one or two places where you could nitpick and say, well, it says a long flowing gown and that's not really what she's wearing in that panel type stuff.
Right.
But not many. And I do think if they collect that into like an uber hardcover a couple of years down the line when it's done, that there would be a small but fanatical audience that would just love that.
Oh, yeah. I had the, I gave it away to, I forgot who I gave it away. The Marvel Comics 2-issue adaptation of Blade Runner.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Well, other stuff for a more adult audience from Boom is like the Farscape stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What else do they have? They've got, again, some of their creator-owned properties, you know, Hunter's Fortune, pretty much, you know, the other stuff by Mark Waid. When they do Unknown, which is really, really good, mm-hmm. or Potter's Field, which I would assume he's a little unhappy, has more or less been adapted into the Forgotten TV show,
mm-hmm.
because that just seems like such a ripoff of his stuff. But, I mean, they've got, I think, a good lineup for, you know, an older audience. But you combine that with a really, you know, strong library of, you know, all ages stuff. And, I mean, that I really respect them going in that direction and, you know, hope they have great success with it.
Mm-hmm.
So. And, I mean, they're doing all right. They came in with, I think, let's see, the sixth largest share of the pie this month with 2.89% of the total units for the top 300 trades and seventh place on the monthly comics side with 1.09% of the total units for the top 300 comics. So, I mean, they're doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But with Irredeemable having a very strong showing, again, rank 3 for the first trade here. I see that as a really good sign. I think a lot of people who may not have tried the monthly probably jumped on this. I think pricing it at the $10 mark was a very smart move. I think that's always wise for publishers to do that. Now, this only had the first 4 issues, but still that works out to, you know, $2.50 a piece versus, I think it was $3.99.
Yeah, that's great.
So, if it gets people on board, success.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving down the list just a little bit, we've got Filthy Rich, the hardcover from DC Comics. That was at 5,276 units. And I know pretty much nothing about that. Did you pick that one up?
I did not pick that one up, no. In fact, when it came out, I had to do a double take and find out who wrote it and who did the art and everything, and it turns out it's Brian Azzarello.
Yeah. That's why I put the solicitation blurbs in these spreadsheets we look at every month, because, I mean, some of this stuff, I can't keep track of it all.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is this part of Vertigo's new crime line?
I am not sure.
Okay. Part of me wants to say no, but I know Azzarello does crime.
Again, you know. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not that deep into the Vertigo stuff in terms of what I read, really, once you get past Fables and its related titles. For me, it's a pretty short reading list on the Vertigo side.
You know what? I can tell you in a few minutes because this is going to bug me. It is. This is totally going to bug me.
I can understand that.
Okay, here we go. DC Vertigo Crime. The books out right now are... they are hardcovers. Oh, yep, Filthy Rich. There we go. Dark Entries by Ian Rankin. And The Chill by Jason Starr. These are part of the Vertigo Crime line. All hardcovers.
Cool.
There you go.
Good deal.
So, I was wrong and I was right. So.
Well, all right,
so, yes, this is part of the crime line. So, all right. Excellent.
Cool. Moving down to rank 6, we've got Warren Ellis's Frankenstein's Womb graphic novel, 5,018 units. That is by Avatar, and that's, I think, really good sales for Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was... How many pages was this one?
I don't know.
It doesn't say. The only reason I ask is there are a couple of these that sometimes it's, you know, should it have been on this list or should it have been on the other list, the comic side? Mm-hmm. Not saying either way on this one, but, you know, sometimes.
Give me a minute and I'll look that up for you.
Cool.
What's next? Hush Complete.
That's the...
Which is kind of like an omnibus. It's kind of like, you know what this is akin to? Remember when DC brought out the complete Superman Our Worlds at War trade paperback? That's exactly what this is. This is like a softcover omnibus.
Yeah, it's like a double size or whatever trade or whatever.
Yeah.
So, which...
So hopefully, I wish DC would do more of this with their properties. Because it's in color, it's an oversized trade. It's essentially a trade paperback, an absolute trade paperback. That's what it is.
Well, I'm going to go with, I think, that by, and, you know, I was talking about this a few minutes ago, by constantly repackaging how they do stuff, it turns some people off. You know, I've got...
Right, I could see that, yes.
You know, if you've got the two trades, you know, do you want to get the complete, do you not, you know, that kind of thing. For me, with DC, it's more when they do the showcases and then come up with the Chronicles.
Right.
Because, you know, I'd been getting the Flash ones and the showcase, now I'm thinking, you know, I want the Chronicles, you know, it's... And it's really... what it has succeeded in doing is completely turning me off the showcase line.
Right, exactly.
I went from getting to the point where I was getting most of those to now I'm getting none of them. And that's bad for DC. You know. Now, if they ever publish that Showcase Presents Who's Who, well, I'll get those. I'll make an exception.
Maybe.
But I don't think there's much risk of them doing that.
At this point, you're better off going on eBay, buying the issues yourself, and calling up Library Binding Company and doing it yourself.
Or I'd be better off going down to my comic room and pulling out the spare copies I've got of them and just sending them to Library Binding.
Well, then, no, that's what I mean. Yeah, you have them, right.
Oh, I have them. I just haven't gotten around to sending them out.
All right, this is going to piss you off. Frankenstein's Womb, 48 pages.
You see, that's what I was thinking. It had a $6.99 cover price.
Yeah.
That should have been on the other list.
Right.
And at...
And what was Irredeemable? What's that page count?
It would be four issues at least 20 pages an issue, so a slim trade paperback, but still a trade paperback, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Whereas, that Frankenstein's Womb at that 5,018 units would have placed it at rank 252 on the comic side this month.
Right.
Still not bad, but it just seems a little inconsistent where they put some of these items.
Irredeemable is 112 pages.
It collects four issues that were done as issues. Even
yes.
If it were thinner, I would say it still fits here.
Right. No, it does. Yeah. I think it does, yes.
But
it's thin, 112, but that's a good, small trade paperback size. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Under $10, you can get into a series. Again, doing a first trade that way, I think it's just good business.
Mm-hmm. I think anything over 80 pages, because you can have an 80-page giant, which is on the comic side, right? You do 80-page giants with Bob.
Yeah.
So a 48-page graphic novel, I don't know. It's kind of cheap in more ways than one.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
I mean, well, let me ask you this. It's got to be the lowest price thing. No, wait, $4.99. What's that? Witchblade Witch Hunt, but that's got to be a special price.
I'm pretty sure that is a special price.
Yeah, that collects six issues.
Yeah.
So that's a special price right there. But the $6.99, that's for something brand, well, you know. Well, what's $6? Oni Press, Resurrection.
Hang on, I'm filtering.
We are doing this on the fly tonight, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. It's the only way to do this.
No, but it's interesting to see. Because we talk about this on the monthly breakdown, what the minimum price is, what the maximum price is.
Mm-hmm. Well, with Resurrection, that's a trade of the first miniseries, so I think that's another four issue thing.
Okay.
So, and I'm assuming all got printed as individual issues, but at least a couple of them did. I'm not positive on that one.
Right.
So I can see that. The Witchblade Volume 1, that's a new reprinting at a introductory price, trying to get people to jump on board. So clearly promotional type thing. That makes sense.
Well, remember we had the Vertigo sampler a couple months ago, too.
Yeah.
That was like $5 and you had like 6 issues. What a great deal that was. They're all number one issues, but, you know.
But again, if you
it's
like
not like it's
that,
48 pages, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if you like any one of those, it then tells you what series of trades to go and be getting. Mm-hmm. You know, so those kinds of sampler things work as a feeder system into these other titles, which is something I think that the industry really needs right now. Or really at any point, you know.
Right.
So, see, what else do we got up here? Rank 8, we've got Dark Entries hardcover from DC, 4,325 units. And who is that by? Ian Rankin. And it's a John Constantine, which, you know, I would have put Hellblazer in the title, but that's just me.
Well, no, that's another Vertigo crime book.
But it stars John Constantine, who is Hellblazer, so it's one of those that, while it's one of their crime books, they could have, potentially there are people who may not have realized it was a Hellblazer story and might have gotten it if they'd known that.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, here's the other thing. On the cover, Ian Rankin, his name is in giant letters, right? And it says nothing about John Constantine.
But if they're gearing this towards, you know, readers at bookstores and whatnot, going for the number one international best-selling crime writer, putting his name in big letters, probably a smart move.
No, it is. But what I'm saying is it doesn't say anything about Hellblazer or John Constantine.
Yeah.
On the cover. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But you're right. No, you're absolutely right. I know where you're going with this.
It just seems like they're going for two different audiences here. And while the audiences may be a bit not mutually exclusive, because I'm sure there's some overlap, but you know what I mean, very different audiences, I think they could have done it in such a way that, you know, people would have picked up the Ian Rankin name and said, ooh, I should get that. And if they'd put Hellblazer in the title, people would have said, ooh, I should get that, you know, on the other side of the fence.
I agree with that, too.
So,
yep.
You know, trying to maximize that whole sales thing.
I think they talked about that in 11 O'Clock Comics as well. Like, why didn't they advertise this as a Constantine book? I don't know why.
I'm pretty sure that we discussed it on the monthly previews call that month.
Did you?
Because I think, and I don't know if Bob had mentioned it was a Hellblazer thing or if he hadn't realized it was, but there was discussion around, well, why didn't they just put Hellblazer in the title?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just sent you the link so you can see all three of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
So, interesting stuff. And now, we get to rank 9, and we finally get our first Marvel title.
Hey!
And Marvel, again, top dog in terms of the largest share of the top 300 sales. So, kind of interesting that, you know, so many other things did better than their best thing. And their best thing is Thor Volume 2 by J. Michael Straczynski. It's trade paperback, 4,188 units. And that covered issues 7 through 12, and 600. So, second volume of his run. Curious if they're going to renumber it yet again when he gets off the book and somebody gets on after him.
Probably.
It really annoys me the way they do the numbering on these things, because it makes it virtually impossible for my computer system to pick up, well, what was the previous trade, how did this sell in relation to the series, and that sort of thing.
Right.
So at some point, I'll have some, you know, excessive amount of spare time to devote to fixing that in terms of my number crunching system, but don't hold your breath on that. And then we get, and this one I think is a little interesting, Silver Surfer Requiem, premier hardcover, which I believe is reorder activity of 4,143 units, bringing its total known sales to 7,771 estimated units, and that collected obviously the 4-issue Silver Surfer Requiem miniseries. But I'm surprised to see it that high on the list.
Oh, so am I. Absolutely. This was an interesting story too. I collected this in a monthly format. It's, you know, Silver Surfer, the end is what it is.
Exactly.
And you know, he's losing his cosmic power, and, you know, Galactus is in it at the end, and one wonders why Galactus just doesn't help him out by giving him the power cosmic again or whatever. I forget the – it's been so long since I've read it, but essentially Norrin Red does die, and Galactus really becomes kind of a hero at the end. It's pretty cool what he does.
It was a good story. It had a little too much of Straczynski's, I don't want to say preachiness to it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it did. Oh, yeah, it did.
I mean, I like some of what Straczynski's done, but I don't think he's done anything in comics that's been anywhere remotely as good as what he did on the Babylon 5 TV series.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we'll see what he has to offer coming up. Who knows? He may even finish the 12 someday.
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started on that.
It was a cheap shot. I had to go for it. I mean, come on.
You know, but what's interesting about this is, and they brought this series was brought out kind of about the exact same time the Silver Surfer In Thy Name miniseries was coming out.
Mm-hmm. So I think it followed after that. Yeah.
It followed after that, but In Thy Name was just a terrible, terrible series as far as I remember, because I remember picking them up at the same time, and I couldn't figure out where in continuity In Thy Name was going on, because you had Silver Surfer popping up in Annihilation at the same time, and it's like, what is going on? He's dead, he's alive, he's not in continuity, he is in continuity. What is going on here? It was very confusing,
yeah.
You know, in 2008 with Silver Surfer, and a little bit in 2007.
Well, if they want to do non-continuity stories, you know, that's fine. It'd be nice if they would have at least some kind of indication that this is, you know, intentionally not inside of continuity, to where you're not sitting there while you're reading it thinking, but I thought he
right.
was dead, did he come back, you know, trying to piece it all together.
Yeah, you just didn't know, because you essentially had the Silver Surfer in three different series at once. You know, including Annihilation.
Yeah.
You didn't know where In Thy Name was taking place. You know where the other two were taking place. One of it is an imaginary ending story. The other one is a Marvel event.
Well,
then the other one is like, what the hell? Where is this coming from?
Well, in fairness, I think there were only a few thousand people who were reading it and cared.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Silver Surfer fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
All right, let's jump around a little bit. We've got Spider-Man One More Day at rank 11. That's the premier hardcover. It's reorder activity. It's another 3,668 estimated units, bringing its known total to 8,328, which is good. But, you know, I think that's going to be one that a lot of people want to forget.
Mm-hmm.
First hardcover for Dark Avengers is right below it at rank 12 with 3,231 estimated units. Which, given how well that sold on the monthly side, you know, the 100,000 mark, not very impressive numbers for the premier hardcover. Now, let's see. The other one that's kind of interesting is if we go down to rank 19, we've got the second volume of the Trinity trade paperback series. It's 2 of 4. It did 2,609 units. Now, that's a drop of over 19%, 19.08% from the total known estimated sales of the first volume. And at 2,600 units, 2,609 technically, we'll give it the 9 just to be generous, that's an average of maybe one per store. Not impressive.
No.
And for something, I mean, I like the story, don't get me wrong. I thought it was entertaining and it kept me hooked the whole time. But it's one that, for the I don't say event, because it wasn't really an event, but you know what I mean. For that kind of publishing stunt, it might be the best
right.
way to phrase it, you would have thought it would have had a little bit more traction on the trade side.
You read this whole series?
Yeah.
Okay. And you liked it overall?
I liked it overall. I'm not going to say it was perfect. There are a few places where I thought it was a little shaky. It's another year, or not another year, another storyline in which Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman get kind of bumped out of reality or whatever, so they're out of play
mm-hmm.
in terms of most of the heroes thinking that. They were still major players in the whole story because the whole story was kind of about them and their place in the universe. I didn't think it was as tight as 52 I don't think it was as good as 52. It had one narrative going through it for the most part. So it kept the narrative trajectory, whereas 52 kind of bounced around. But, you know, while I liked it, I didn't think it was as good as 52, and certainly nowhere near as bad as Countdown to Final Crisis.
Can I ask you a question? 52,
mm-hmm.
weekly series, Countdown, weekly series, Trinity, weekly series, Wednesday Comics, weekly series, and now there's nothing, just like that.
Well, what's the question, actually? I suppose
the question is
for that.
Well, no, the question is, it's more like an observation that DC had this great, you know, for 3 years and 12 weeks, they had this weekly thing going on.
Well, keep in mind, there was a gap between
Trinity
and Wednesday Comics. Wednesday Comics is also a completely different beast than any of the other weekly books, because really, all you had to do for that as an editor, and I don't want to make, when I say all you had to do, it sounds like it's simple, which it wasn't,
right,
is get 15 creative teams to do 12 issue stories.
Mm-hmm.
And if that took a year to assemble and get it all done, hey, so what? You've got it to do when you kick it out on a weekly basis. Granted, there were bigger pages, yada yada, a lot of people involved, whatever. So I'm not saying that that was a simple task. It most certainly was not. However, it was minuscule compared to telling a weekly story. I mean, Trinity is the first year-long weekly American series that I'm aware of that had the same writer and artist for the entire year.
Right. You're right.
52 and Countdown rotated people in and out. I really think that these were good ideas. I think the execution could have and should have been a little bit better and tighter. I'm not saying that that would have been easy or even possible, but enough people got kind of burnt out on 52 that they didn't get on to Countdown. Countdown really sucked.
It
creatively.
Did. Right.
Which really made people kind of lukewarm towards Trinity, which, although it was better, people already, you know, two years into a weekly commitment. Yeah. What I would suggest to DC is do another weekly book, do it at, say, $1.99 cover price,
mm-hmm.
get it to where there's really that feeling of you must read this, even if you read nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And use it as a test bed for getting people interested in various characters.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's where I think Wednesday Comics was very successful. I'd be interested in the Metal Men series, a la the feature they did there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love for the people who were doing the Flash in that Wednesday Comics to go pick up the regular title. Now, granted, I'm looking forward to Geoff Johns and certainly don't want him off the book, but you know what
right.
I mean. Most of the other features fell a little flat for me, but it was a good sampler. It got me interested in some stuff, and potentially they could launch titles out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Trinity, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman all had at least one title in the case of Wonder Woman, and about 15 or 20 for the case of Batman, and a handful for Superman. There was no mm-hmm. exit strategy.
Right.
You know, same with Countdown, although they tried. 52, we at least got a Booster Gold series out of that. So if they use it like a, I don't say a tryout book, because you need to put some really strong creators on there. But if they go for the ABC kind of storytelling model that Paul Levitz really, you know, used very successfully way back when he was on Legion of Superheroes, where you've got the A plot, that's the main thing, you've got a B plot that's coming into play, and a C plot of, oh, what's that kind of teaser. And then as one story ends, the B plot takes over as the A plot, the C plot progresses to a bigger backup kind of, you know, cut to kind of a feature, and then a new thread gets introduced as the new C plot.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that kind of a thing and have those plots written by various people, to where you can just kind of weave them in or whatever and not have to work one creative team to death, which is, I think, the big problem with a weekly series, is it's just a hellacious pace. But if you do that, you could then wind up putting in, you know, be it an Aquaman or some obscure team or whatever, put them back in, see how they go, if there's any interest in that, and maybe spin some stuff out.
Let me ask you something along kind of the same lines. You know, not so much as a tryout book, like a showcase book, but what do you think of having in the back of like Batman and Robin, a preview of like Power Girl number one. You know, you've kind of seen that over the years.
Well, I mean, they're doing that a lot now, yeah. But I kind of
doing that a lot. Yeah,
I'll flip through it the first time I see it, but since I get most of the Marvel and DC books, whenever they do that, I'll see that same feature like 15, 20 times, literally,
yeah.
15 or 20 times minimum.
Yeah, I feel like I get ripped off sometimes. You know?
I don't count that. If it was taking, I see that as in-house ads.
Mm-hmm.
If it was taking the place of original content pages, I'd be really miffed. I think it is of questionable success. Certainly, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea for them to try that, but it's not really getting me to buy anything I wouldn't otherwise. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, you get everything anyway, so.
True, true. But I think there are some people who, well, the Rebels annual preview they've gotten some of the books lately.
Okay.
The art sucks, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't like the art, I should phrase. I don't want to be
who's doing the art, you know?
Off the top of my head, I have no idea. Okay. But it was not to my liking. It was not to the quality I think the Rebels series currently has been. And I think it will turn people off on the book. So whenever they do those kinds of things, it's a calculated risk.
Mm-hmm.
Back when Marvel did that sort of a preview for Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos, and that's Howling as in Wolf's Howling or whatever, you know, and
right.
It was the Creature Commandos, essentially, sort of a thing. The art was so atrocious, the coloring so muddy, that I think a lot of people who had considered pre-ordering the book said, no.
Right.
That's
it can be a detriment, right.
Yeah, that's counterproductive. Now, obviously they've got all these extra pages. They can't afford to pay for new content to go fill those. I get that. You know, so I guess the question comes down to what should they do? I don't know. If they were to take those couple of pages, I don't know how many they wind up with or whatever, but say in the back of Warlord, maybe they reprint some of the backup features from the original Warlord series. Conqueror of the Barren Earth, Arrak, Arion, trying to think what else they had back in there. OMAC maybe, but you know what I mean.
OMAC, right.
Put those out there and do it in a manner where it's like, hey, here's a couple of these, give them a complete story arc and say, hey, there's this whole bunch more in this trade paperback or this showcase presents or whatever. So they could still use it as marketing or whatever, but it would be older enough material and do it specific to various books that it might seem kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Power Girl, maybe take some of the shorter backup features or whatever in the old Superman family stuff, the Mr. and Mrs. Superman or some other Earth 2 stuff or the Huntress Earth 2 feature. Now, granted, that might be a little confusing because it's not the Huntress we've got in Birds of Prey, which is the whole problem of constantly rebooting your universe, but, you know, oh well. It would make people feel like they're getting more for their money, even those of us who may have that original material. You know, particularly if we're not feeling like we're getting charged extra for it. But I'd rather see that than the couple of pages of the Magog preview in every DC book I get for the next few weeks.
Exactly.
But I think it would also make sense for particularly Marvel and DC, although Boom, I think, could make good use of this idea, come out with a sampler book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, periodically, once a quarter or whatever, here's something, and gear it towards getting people into a book. Don't just hand them the first 3 pages, 10 pages, or whatever of a story. Do it more like the Marvel's, you know, sagas freebies they've given out. But geared more, I don't know, more interesting, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that would benefit the publishers in terms of trade paperbacks. Trying to bring this whole full circle back to what we're trying to talk about. Although it is all relevant. If you've got stuff that, I mean, right now, Walking Dead, it's selling through the roof for a trade. Imagine if they had a 16-page recap, intro, kind of a sales pitch thing that, you know, I go into the store saying, yeah, I don't know about this. They just said, here, read this. you know, enough to get you hooked and say, okay, I've got to go pick up this series. Irredeemable. Something to pitch the concept, get the point across, get me hooked. Okay, I'll buy this $10 trade. Fable, something to, you know, again, a 16-page kind of a on-ramp, if you will, into this. Suddenly a store could sell all 12 trades if I like it enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe not all at once, but certainly potentially in rapid succession. And on the trade side, that kind of longevity is really what makes both the Marvel and DC, you know, sales so healthy every month. Is we'll wind up with, you know, the you know, Why the Last Man, the Fables, the Sandman, the Preachers, you know, those kinds of things month in, month out. Now with Marvel, you don't have quite that same sort of sales trends in terms of one property having this just backlog of material that thump comes out every time.
Mm-hmm.
Image, you kind of get that a bit with Walking Dead. But, you know, that's, you know, actually kind of, no, I guess I take it back. It's still going on strong. They had every volume of Walking Dead's trade paperback except, I believe, no, actually 10 was the top one. So, yeah, all 10 of them this month. On Invincible, we had 11, 10, and 1. So, you know, there's a lot to be said, again, for Invincible. If he did a, here's a cheap way to get on, here's some ideas of what's going to be in the various trades or whatever, maybe it could jumpstart those sales a bit more. So, again, that would be a separate kind of a feature, but I think that would be more effective than, you know, spamming us with random preview crap and the back pages of some of these books.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The only thing that can kind of akin a Marvel Vertigo series would be like what they're doing with, you know, like Powers and Criminal and that kind of thing.
Yeah, but even those we don't really see kind of ever-present on the trade side.
No, we don't.
If anything, I would say Marvel's equivalents would be maybe the Ultimate line.
The Max line, the Punisher Max?
Yeah, maybe, maybe.
Maybe.
But also the, I don't say the Event line, but the right. Civil War, the Secret Invasion, the World War Hulk kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Dark Avengers. Well, that's all their Dark Reign stuff. That's kind of what I meant.
It's there right now, but a year from now, do you think it'll be there?
No, no.
And that's my point. No. What do we think that is here now on this list today? Do we think we'll be here, you know, when we talk about it this time next year?
One More Day could.
True, true. But that's a one-shot kind of a thing, not a line of books.
Right, okay.
Whereas the Walking Dead, the Fables, you know, we get the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look over the list. And I'd have to look over the list not only this month, but like the past 4 months and see what's similar in nature from Marvel.
Exactly. And we're going to have a couple of things that keep showing up on the list. Mm-hmm. But how many of them are this through line or this obvious get this, then this, then this, then this, then this kind of line of books? Whereas that's part of why I think DC is so consistent on the trade side. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, you look at what they have on the list this month, and you wind up with, you know, obviously they top the list with the with Fables, but we've got a ton of Why the Last Man, a bunch of Green Lanterns. Now, right now, I'd say Green Lantern, maybe that's just because of the Blackest Night stuff, but who knows? Maybe we're seeing, you know, a trend that we'll keep seeing these month in, month out, just because they're so strong, you know what I mean? So a year from now, maybe we'll see the Green Lanterns as the DC equivalent to how the Vertigo books are doing. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But Preacher, Jack of Fables to a lesser degree, certainly Sandman is ever-present.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've got the first volume of Planetary on the list down at 269 to coincide with the final issue finally coming out 10 years later.
Yeah, no kidding.
But again, you look at how it looks like, I think, every volume of Why the Last Man is on the list, and this is not a fluke. It's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you build up that kind of a library of things. Again, like Kirkman's done with Walking Dead, you can almost literally bank on that every month.
Have you picked up the Y Deluxe hardcovers yet?
I picked up the first one. I think I picked up the second. Had they solicited the third yet?
I don't think so.
Good, because I don't think I've ordered it.
Yeah.
I'd have to see if I got the second. My plan is, yes, to get them all and eventually to read them all. Because I haven't read Why the Last Man at all.
I haven't read it either. And I've been meaning to pick those up.
Yeah. I figured they I thought about getting the trades at one point, but then they started doing the hardcovers. It's like, okay, I'll get on board for that.
Mm-hmm. So. It's kind of like Fables with me, too. I haven't really got on board Fables just yet.
I can't recommend that highly enough.
I know. The last one to read it.
Yeah. There's so much out there, you can't read all of it, is what it comes down to. So you got to pick and choose. See, what do we have that's interesting from some of the smaller publishers? Let's take Image, Marvel, and DC off the list. That, of course, gets rid of two-thirds of the list. We talked briefly about The Muppet Show being on there. We got the hardcover for Stephen Colbert's Tech Jansen.
I was just going to say Tech Jansen.
115 for the rank, and it sold 1,012 units. And, you know, he's got his own nightly TV show. I would have expected a little better. I mean, I don't watch it every night, but I don't think
he's... But it took forever to get the series out.
But it's in hardcover now.
It is in hardcover.
You know, I could see not pimping it when you're not sure when the next issue's coming out. I get that. But it's collected now. There's no reason for him not to be, you know, shamelessly pimping that every chance he gets.
Did he pimp it on the show? I'm sure he did.
I'm sure he's mentioned it a time or two, but the few times I've watched, because, I mean, there have literally been times I don't get home from work early enough to catch it, or I'm just too tired or whatever. I haven't seen him do so. And, again, there are a couple of times, like right now, you know, hold it up at the beginning of every other episode or something, you know?
Right, exactly. Or at the end, at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Another book, can I mention real quick, The Complete Essex County by Jeff Lemire came out in the trade. It's also available in a hardcover as well. I don't see the hardcover on here. Maybe it sold under 300 units or whatever.
Quite possibly.
Quite possibly, yeah. But estimated sales here of 772 for the trade at only $29.95. I think the hardcover was $10 more, I think. If I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
Also, the from Top Shelf, the Surrogates hardcover came out.
Right, right.
And they're not on the list either, so that is kind of...
I don't think they came out through Diamond in August. I think that came out September through Diamond.
Oh, was it September? Okay.
I think.
You could be right.
Because the only things we had this month from Top Shelf were the Essex County and From Hell, I believe.
And From Hell, right. Well, no, what I mean is I wonder if the Surrogates sold under and didn't sell. But you know what? September, you're probably right. In fact, you could probably find the September numbers. Right,
I know they had copies available at Comic-Con, but it took me a good couple of weeks after that before I got mine, and I'm thinking it was into September.
Right.
And I've got to imagine with the movie coming out that they did okay.
I would think so, yeah.
I really like the original miniseries. I have not had time to read the second trade.
Mm-hmm.
But I am looking forward to seeing the movie when it comes out.
Yeah, I didn't see that one, and I did not see Whiteout.
Yeah, I don't
know. But those are, they're going to be Saturday night, you know, shows that I'm going to see, so.
Yeah. Well, it took me a while to go see Wolverine. I waited till DVD on that, so I'm pretty bad.
What'd you think about that?
I liked it. I thought it was okay. There were a couple of places where I thought the effects were really bad. Other parts where I thought they were absolutely brilliant. So it was a little uneven.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was a great movie. How about that?
Yeah, I agree.
So,
did you like it better than X3?
Ooh, that's a tough call.
Oh, I did.
Personally, I thought the second X-Men movie was the pinnacle of the franchise.
Oh, I thought so, too.
You know, I thought they had some really cool stuff in the third one, Magneto's escape from jail and a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they had enough things there that really clicked with me that I'd put that as kind of the second on the list, followed by maybe the X-Men movie, and then the Wolverine probably below that.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were bad, though. So.
What else you got?
Ranked 295. New Universal Volume 1, Everything Went White, Premier Hardcover. Actually, reorder activity of 345 units, bringing its known total to 3,277 units. That was written by Warren Ellis. That covered the first six issues. And eventually they may do something else with New Universal. I know they started a miniseries or two with it, but I don't know that they're ever going to do anything with that stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
And it really irks me when they, you know, toss some stuff out there and then it just vanishes. You know, it's like, come on, make a commitment to this stuff. If you expect us as readers to do so, you know, every time they do that, they're essentially training us to have a wait and see approach.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one I'll mention, just because it's a wacky name, is Whack Whack. At least I assume that's how you pronounce it, from Viz at rank 205. It's the first volume. It's a graphic novel, presumably manga, because it's Viz. And it did 554 estimated units. And again, Whack Whack, how can you go wrong with a name like that? I have no idea what the hell it is. It just, you know, amused me to see
the You just like the name, huh?
It jumped out at me. What can I say? So...
Well, Fahrenheit 451 came out from First Second Books. Just under 1,000 in estimated sales. I saw this at Borders the other day, actually.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that I think could do well in the bookstores, because, I mean, it's about that whole literature thing.
This would do well in the college market, too, in the college bookstores.
Yes, yes, it would.
You know, it really would.
Well, as would Tech Jansen, as would Drew Android's Dream of Electric Sheep when they collect that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
Because I think there are a couple of things that kind of, you know, gravitate towards certain audiences. And, you know, you get where the audience is, you'll do well.
Hey, I found something that's interesting that you may find interesting, too. Rank 249, mm-hmm. Frankenstein's Womb. For $16.99, the hardcover.
That is interesting, because up
I'm
above...
I'm guessing that's 48 pages, right? Limited to only 1,000 copies.
Yeah. And, yeah, I think they managed to stay under that limit pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Limited to does not mean guaranteed printing of.
Right, exactly.
But still, they got orders for, you know, 44.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Thereabouts, so not too bad.
They should have lowered the price, maybe.
I don't think so, because it's a hardcover,
you so?
And you know the graphic novel was $6.99. So I think you want to have the hardcover be a little bit more than that, particularly if it's a limited edition. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's kind of a what's the point?
Hey, now real quick, we've talked about this before, and I know we're kind of running long here, but. What do you think about bringing out the trade and the hardcover in the same month or even the same week? I mean, Dark Horse does it, and they're going to do it with the Wonder Woman book coming up.
You know, I'm not in favor of them bringing out both editions, period. But I think if they're going to, there is a certain wisdom to doing it simultaneously. They're ordered at the same time. That way you don't have people saying, well, I'll just wait for the other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's right there.
Right.
But then they kind of split the order between the two. So, you know, once you get somebody who's, let me rephrase that. I think there is a certain contingent of the collecting, group of people that once mm-hmm. they get into either the trade or the hardcover, they're really not likely to switch.
Right.
They want it to look uniform on the shelf, that kind of a thing. These are the people where if you change the trade dress, you're just gonna annoy them. And I say that as a potential member of that community.
I am that community as well.
You know,
yes.
Not that I get that many hardcovers, trades, etc., but, you know, I want it to look nice on the shelf. It's a consistency thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to publishers not really playing into the habitual nature, I think, of some of the consumers. And, again, if they're going to do both and they put them out at the same time, I think that's a little bit harder for the retailer necessarily to know, well, which do I want to stock, how much of each. You know, should I get three of the hardcovers and two of the trades, or for the trades one of the hardcover, or, you know, how many people do I have, which do they like, whatever. But I would hope that good retailers know their regular customers' buying habits and preferences and communicate well enough with those customers that they can deal accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
As a consumer, I'd like to have them both at the same time. And again, for publishers, I just think it's smart because it prevents, again, like I was saying, the I'll just wait for the other edition whenever it becomes available. You know, I really think that by having people are disincentivized to get the monthly comic because it's going to be collected. They're disincentivized to get that first collection because it's going to be collected if it's in hardcover, in trade, if it's in trade, in hardcover. They're disincentivized from that other collected edition because, let's face it, some of these are going to get that uber deluxe omnibus, you know, chrome plated, you know, Han Solo and Carbonite edition or what have you. So you've already gotten people to where they're in the habit of not getting the material.
Right.
Now, if you cut that out by really limiting what you do the uber deluxe edition for, which I think they should, save that for the special stuff that pretty much everyone would agree, yeah, okay, I can see that, that deserves it type material. And then get to where the two collected editions come out simultaneously. Then all you've done is just undercut the incentive to get the monthly comic, which is what's funding the creation of the content for all the process, so there's still a problem there. But you've at least minimized the damage you're doing to your revenue stream, in terms of people waiting for a later edition and then never getting it. Flip mm-hmm. side, you've hurt your revenue stream because now you don't have that 6 months later, well, we can just kick the same material out again.
Right.
It makes the double and triple and quadruple dipping a little bit challenging for the publishers. But I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think it's smart for them in the long term to be doing that. I think it turns the audience off.
I guess, you know, in a perfect world, I wouldn't mind, for example, you know, Straczynski's Thor, right, Volume 2 or whatever it is that came out this month, in trade. Or you know, or in it, when it comes out in trade paperback, right? And when it comes out in trade, just have a stripped-down 6-issue in trade paperback. But when the hardcover comes out, you know, give me a little bit more than just the hardcover backing. You know, give me some introduction, give me some sketch pages, give me a little bit more for my money. That's all I'm asking for.
But I think there's a certain wisdom in saving that material, or not saving it, but using that material in the monthly book.
Oh, there should be. You're absolutely right. That's I'm liking what they're doing with Project Superpowers, John.
Mm-hmm.
There's always sketches in the back of that Ross has done, and this, that, and the other thing, and a little commentary. I think that's cool. Say what you will about the series.
I love it.
But
so
as far
I'll
as the extras, yeah, yeah, I like it too. But I think it's kind of nice.
I did really like, particularly in that first volume where they would do those lineup pages at the end, how in this one we're getting the origins and stuff like that.
Oh, they're still doing that.
Yeah, well, like I said, yeah. In the current one, they're doing the origins and stuff. I think that's awesome.
Hey, I'm going to have Joe Ryban on my show coming up real quick,
cool.
too.
Cool, cool.
Mm-hmm. And Joe and I, for those of our listeners that are interested in Project Superpowers, there's kind of a continuity thing going on that I want to figure out, and that is they're doing Chapter 2 right now. They're doing Meet the Bad Guys, and then they're going to restart up the Black Terror series with number 5.
Right.
And I'm getting Joe on there, and I told him I'm going to ask him this question, how it all fits together as far as continuity goes.
I think they would be well served to put together kind of a good website that has the timeline, has kind of the additional background material or fits the
I'll
pieces together.
I'll talk to him about that, yeah.
Because they've got a really rich tapestry and universe they've got there, and part of what I enjoy about it is it's not like I've read the last 20 years of all of these characters.
Well, and some characters are new.
Exactly.
And some characters you don't know who is new and who is old, kind of, in a way.
I like having new universes to dive into, and that's part of what I'm really enjoying about Irredeemable.
You see, that's why I gotta get on board Irredeemable. Yeah. I think I'd really like that series.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a lot there to go explore, and I think that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, And again, having that extra, you know, kind of material or whatever in the monthly books to incentivize people to get that is just, I think, smart business.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you look through this list and you start at the top and, you know, you get things like Filthy Rich, Dark Entries, which are, you know, original content, hardcovers and stuff, which is really kind of an anomaly, because normally we'd have to go a ways down the list to get to any original content.
Mm-hmm.
And if most of this stuff is originally being done either in a monthly book here in the States or in some original format overseas, be it manga, you know, in Japan and stuff, if you cut off that original revenue stream that's generating the content, you can't really collect a material you didn't produce.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't have the rights to, I guess, in the sake of manga, but you get the idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, when I see some of the sales trends on the monthly side, where things are getting a lot lower than I think they should, in terms of being viable and stuff, it worries me. You know, you look at rank 22, we've got Secret Six Unhinged with 23,028 units. And that book on the monthly side, see if I can find it real quick, you know, is one of those that's just not setting really the sales world on fire. It's actually, I take it back, it's doing better than I had thought. It's doing 24,135 units.
Mm.
But, you know, we can go another, you know, 1,000 down and see a lot of DC books in that area. You know, Rebels is down at 11,670 and stuff. And I don't know how that's doing on the trade side yet. But again, trades aren't making up the sales lack on the comic side for a lot of these things. And the content's gotta get created somewhere. And it's gotta get paid for somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But
I made a joke in my podcast this week that I think that a Runaways trade paperback comes out every single week now.
It does seem like there are a couple of things.
Doesn't...
It's like, how did they, where did they get this material? How could they come out so fast?
Between them and the X-Men. You know, there was always an X-Men title.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm just waiting for some publisher to just start rebooting their title every month and just have it always be the first issue.
Wouldn't that be great?
Not really. It'd really annoy the hell out of me, but it'd be funny. So, I mean, overall, good sales stuff this month, interesting trends, nice to see Marvel and DC kind of neck and neck. Good to see strong sales on the independent side. Really happy to see how Boom's doing both with, you know, Irredeemable, The Muppet Show, and a few other titles like that. You know, I look at the trade side and it was a decent month.
Mm-hmm.
So what you got coming up on your show?
Well, I just talked about DC Comics Classics Library on my podcast and what exactly is wrong with it, what I like about it, and just kind of, it's kind of all over the map. And I kind of discussed that.
Cool, cool. Which volumes did they come out with on that? That was the Death of Pharaoh Lad.
Death of Pharaoh Lad, the Monster Society of Evil, which is the Shazam serial from the 1940s that has been canceled.
I was going to say that, yeah.
And they also have the Batman, the 1950s annuals.
Right, right. I remember that now. Okay.
Which is an interesting book. The greatest, basically the Flash of Two Worlds, which is like the greatest team-ups of Barry and mm-hmm. Jay, which have been reprinted several different times. So I kind of get into that.
All over the map.
It is. The George Perez Justice League of America.
Yeah,
which was going to be a two-volume set, which I thought, after reading it, they should have brought it out as George Perez presents the Justice League of America, illustrated by George Perez in a single volume, kind of exactly the way they did with the Neil Adams Library and Archives.
Yes, I would agree with that.
So yeah, you'll have to take a listen to it and, you know, feel free to comment, but it's all over the map. You know, the Golden Age, Silver Age reprints of 1950s material that was originally annual material, which those annuals were reprints of 1940s comics. the greatest team up stories with the Flash, the Feral Lads stuff, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, it's funny because as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, it's cool that they're reprinting some of the older stuff, but it would almost be very interesting for DC in particular if instead of, say, having launched the current Warlord series, mm-hmm. if they had relaunched Warlord as a reprint series with the original Grell run.
Mm, right.
Do it as a buck or whatever, something to where you're getting some stuff that just hasn't been collected, you know, and getting it in a... Hell, they could have done it weekly for 2 years.
Well, they did the Warlord showcase.
They actually... Yeah, I guess you're right. They did come out with that. But, you know, instead of doing that, if they had done it in a you know, collected in issues, you know, mm-hmm. sequence type thing. In other words, I think there's some potential for taking some of the older material and kicking it out as a reprint comic book series versus as a collected edition. Because then they could always recollect it later.
Exactly. And not only did I have my beef with the George Perez book, but the first story in that, John, mm-hmm. it's actually the second of a two-parter between the JLA and the JSA.
Oh, you don't so start you open... a trade in the middle of a story?
Oh, you do if it's illustrated by George Perez, because the first part was not illustrated by George Perez. So you've got part two. It literally opens up. It says part two, and it's got the JSA with the JLA. It's their annual team-up, and they're teaming up with Jack Kirby's New Gods, and they're fighting Darkseid.
Frankly, I would have skipped that one and started with the next story. But
well, I know, and that's my other thing is next April due out is the Crisis on Multiple Earths trade paperback, mm-hmm. which will include that entire two-issue or three-issue, you know, crossover, whatever, two issues or three issues, whatever it is. But you pick up the trade and it's like, okay, great, this is illustrated by George Perez, but you're walking into the second half of the story.
I mean, I could understand that if they were just doing six-issue arcs or chunks of JLA, but for that kind of a collected edition, there's no excuse. That's bad editing.
It's very poor. They should have added in the first part, and they said, you know, said in the introduction, hey, as a bonus, we're including the first part, so you, the reader, is not going to be completely lost when you're reading this book.
Yeah.
Because not only are you buying it for Perez's artwork, because it's literally showcasing Perez's artwork, but you're also buying it for the story.
Yeah.
And that's what really kind of ticked me off.
Understandable. I would agree with you on that.
And then, like I said, I hope to have Joe Keating on from Dynamite Entertainment the next few weeks. So that's going on with me. Oh, and I celebrated my 10-year anniversary online with my website.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
It started out as a small, small website. Has now grown into an empire.
I'd actually have to go dig up when I started the Comic Book Page podcast. It's been at least 7-8 years, I think. Not 10 years, but it's been a hell of a long time.
What's coming up on your show with you and Bob and anyone else?
Well, let's see. As we record this, which is the Thursday before it got released on the Wednesday, let's see. Tomorrow we've got the previews spotlight interviews. Bob interviewed Drew Rausch for Selling Gray, and I really ought to have notes in front of me for this kind of stuff. Dave Peterson for Mouse Guard.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, he got some good interviews on that. We've got the Weekly Comic Spotlight, which people should have listened to this past Monday as they listened to this, but I have yet to read and record. We're covering The Mighty number 9, which I think is kind of sort of like Irredeemable, but not. Mm-hmm. Irredeemable is basically if Superman just has had enough of Lois Lane trying to uncover his secret identity, Jimmy Olsen's just a pain in the butt and flips out. The Mighty is imagine if you've got a world where kind of Superman's maybe the only superhero. He's got kind of a relationship with the police stuff or support organization, and he's got a right-hand, you know, lieutenant kind of a thing. And that lieutenant realizes that the Mighty, not quite as goody-two-shoes as he's letting everybody think he is. Mm-hmm. And it's a similar hero gone evil, high concept, but very, very different approaches, directions, and executions. And while I'm loving Irredeemable, the mighty, and I hate to say this because I'm a huge Mark Waid fan on Irredeemable and just in general, I think The Mighty by Peter J. Tomasi is actually a creepier and arguably better written book.
Hmm.
Both are good. Both are just different, and I like them for each for what they are. I don't have quite the exploring the new superhero universe aspect to The Mighty that I've got with Irredeemable, but there are a couple of things in The Mighty where it's like, okay, that's not good. You know. Mm-hmm. We're going to cover Dr. Voodoo, Avenger of the Supernatural for Marvel, and Haunt. So, two number ones in issue 9 this week. Provided I get it edited in time, and I certainly hope so, we're going to do another, we have done another Superfan Spotlight. This was with Bill Williams, who's local to me here in Austin. He is going to be doing a backup feature for the new Angel series that Bill Willingham is taking over.
Very cool.
And that's Angel is in Buffy and.
Right.
Bill Williams, I've wanted to have on the show for quite some time. He obviously is a writer because he's writing the backup feature. He's done.
And he's an Austin guy.
He's an Austin guy.
Very cool.
But he has done inking, so he's done stuff on the art side. He has done publishing. Obviously, he's done editing as well as part of the publishing. He has been a distributor, tried to go head-to-head with Diamond, distributing independent comics. Didn't go so well because Diamond's kind of big. And also a retailer. So he's kind of covered the spectrum of the comic industry. So we talk about quite a bit of that and just kind of, you know, his viewpoints on things. Because I've had a lot of people, you know, comment about my analysis and stuff as well. He's not in the industry. It's like, no, I'm not. But I think that gives me a certain good outsider perspective that people in the industry may not have. But likewise, having somebody who's been on so many sides of the equation for comics creation, distribution, and selling and stuff, talking with Bill was a lot of fun. He's a great guy. So we did that. And then the next weekly comic spotlight after that will be covering Red Herring number 3 from DC, I think, Wildstorm. Deadpool number 900. It seems like only a year or two that title started. and then Astounding Wolfman number 19. So we got
Deadpool is getting overused, overexposed, I think.
I think so, too. Actually, I've got like, oh gosh, maybe about a year's worth of, not quite a year, at least 9 months of the Deadpool title itself to catch up on. I just haven't had time because it was when I got behind when I got unemployed and stuff. But yeah, we don't need like 15 Deadpool titles. But it does kind of worry me. That's why I was saying earlier, they need feeder systems and tryout type books in terms of tryout for properties, because otherwise all they do is take a property and spin off 16 clones of it or 16 books in the same property. So we got all that coming up. And then actually, since we're a little late on this month doing the trade stuff, it'll almost be time to talk again about the September trades, because as we discussed, they've already started coming out with the initial stuff for September. It's like, it seems like we just finished and I got to start the crunching again. we'll have that. We'll have the comics discussion I do with Bob every month. On the 6th of November, we're doing the previous teleconference. We do that every month. Open invitation on Skype. You just have to contact me. There's instructions on the comic book page forum as to how to do that. And we talk about, you know, what's in previews for a couple hours. You can come and go as you please. You just need to let me know so I can add you into the call as needed. We go cover to cover, but not page by page for previews, because that would just be crazy. And digressions out the wazoo. It's right. Really a lot of fun. And then we'll be doing the preview spotlight recording that same weekend. The deadline for that will be the 6th, and open invitation, send in a clip, which you're always welcome to do, Chris.
I know
you're busy on the podcast. Believe me, I get that.
I know.
But you know, we had a great turnout. We just finished the one that just went up yesterday as we record this was the 24th preview spotlight. We've been doing that for 2 years. And Damien from Cryptographics has sent in submissions each and every month, usually like 5 or 6. So really, really appreciate his support. Anyone who's not checked out the Cryptographics website and podcast and stuff should do so. I've got links in the show notes for the preview spotlight, every one of them, because he's contributed every month.
He's such a great guy. Oh, he really is.
He's awesome.
I know.
I really appreciate knowing that every month we'll at least have some submissions, because usually people procrastinate, and it's like, it's Wednesday, we're recording this weekend, are we going to have anything? And then, you know, people start kicking out, you know, whatever. But we've been doing that for 2 years, so that was kind of a lot of fun to have a 2.5-hour episode this time around for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we try to keep those fairly focused, and I think we keep a pretty good pace going from item to item on that.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, our theory is there's so much in previews, there's got to be something for everybody, and we're trying to help people find what's right for them. So, that's pretty much what we got coming up. Hopefully I'll have time to actually get all those out and stuff, because I'm doing long hours at work. We're in a crunch mode. We'll be through probably Thanksgiving. Not probably. Definitely through Thanksgiving. Hopefully not much longer than that. But, you know, hey. So, like I said, that's what I got going. We talked about yours. Anything else?
No, that's about it. I was just going to ask you, did Wizard World Texas cancel?
I think so.
It did? I was going to ask you if you were going to go, but I thought it canceled, so.
If it has not canceled, hopefully a listener will let me know.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to have time to go check. And I'm interested in going. If it's before Thanksgiving, I'll probably have too much work. If it's after Thanksgiving, I'd certainly be interested.
Yeah.
I've never made it, but part of it, it's a drive up to Dallas. At that time of year, it can be kind of messy weather-wise.
So, oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But a week or two back, I did lunch with some of the listeners here in town, which was a lot of fun.
That's cool. So, excellent.
Yeah. Well, I think that'll pretty much wrap this episode up.
Cool. Thanks, John.
Thanks for doing it, as always. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered the outside scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath logic and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.